Lorena, it's good to have you back on Full Story, although in sobering circumstances.
Yeah, thanks, Nora. It's great to be back.
What went through your mind when you first heard that an explosive device, as it was being described at the time, had been thrown into a crowd of people at an Invasion Day rally in Perth?
I first thought, what? What's an explosive device? I could hear the quote marks. I mean, isn't it that a bomb? What other devices explode other than bombs? So I thought the language was strange. It's the language of euphemism to minimise the situation. And I mean, I know why police are cautious when they use that sort of language, because the situations are unfolding. But my first thought was, you know, my blood ran cold because I was thinking about how many old people and babies and children would have been in that crowd. And then I thought, of course, what does this say about how bad things have become in terms of race relations in this country? And like every other First Nations person, I was bracing myself for what was going to come out of this, because the system continually fails to see racism directed at us as exceptional or serious or worthy of a response.
Last week, 9 days after that bomb was allegedly thrown into the crowd, police confirmed that they were treating it as a terrorist act and that terrorism charges had been laid. That was the first time those charges have been used in the state of WA. How has that been received by First Nations people?
The charges. I think there was a tremendous sense of relief that he had been charged with that terrorism offence. I think the questions were swirling and continue to swirl about why it took them 9 days to do so. The police have to do things carefully and methodically, and in order to substantiate the charge as serious as that, there was a threshold and they had to investigate the man's motivations and search his home and whatever. So I understand that these things were necessary, but we also saw that it happened after sustained pressure from Indigenous leaders and allies, including independent media and a handful of First Nations journalists who work in the mainstream, who struggled very hard to keep this story alive and try and find new ways to cover the story while the police were investigating and trying to manage public anxiety and trying to report how Indigenous people were concerned while that was all unfolding.
Lorena, you were The Guardian's Indigenous Affairs editor and you've worked in newsrooms long enough to have a deep understanding of the way that decisions are made in newsrooms about what gets covered and how it's covered. How do you reflect on the media coverage in the days immediately following the alleged attack?
Well, I wasn't in a newsroom when this unfolded, so I'm watching from outside. But it seemed to me that the media were happy to just report what the police and politicians were saying was happening. So on the day, the West Australian Premier, Roger Cook, was saying, we must remember what this day marks. And you think, oh, Invasion Day. And then he says, no, this Australia Day should be about unity, not division. So completely sidelining the purpose of the gathering, saying things like it runs against the very heart of what it means to be Australian. And we're like, well, no. Again, it's an Invasion Day rally that is about surviving the nation of Australia. The police commissioner, Cole Blance, was saying that at this current stage, the police were treating it as a, quote, hostile act. When he was originally charged with criminal offences, the politicians seemed okay with that. The Prime Minister said they were serious offences, and he said, in my view, quote, as a result of that, they should throw the book at him. There was an implied satisfaction with the criminal charge being enough, even though Indigenous people who were organisers of the rally and others around the country were saying, hang on, if this is some kind of explosive device thrown into a crowd, surely it's more than a criminal offence. This is striking terror into people's hearts. The media reported that. They reported the mild language and the euphemism and the cautious nature of the response from police and politicians, and then got on with the rest of their day.
Lorena, you've written in a piece for The Guardian that this is a low point in Australia's long history of colonial terrorism against Indigenous people. I was hoping you could elaborate on that.
Well, by colonial terrorism, I mean the violence of invasion, the violence of frontier massacres, more than 400 of them over a 180-year period. The last mass killing of Aboriginal people happened at Coniston in the Northern Territory in 1927. So we're talking about a very recent history of mass killings, forced assimilation. You know, our people rounded up and hunted onto missions and reserves. My own grandmother talked about being raised behind barbed wire in conditions like a concentration camp in Western New South Wales in her childhood. We have child removals and all the other forms of legal discrimination that our people experienced for more than two centuries. So in that context of colonial terrorism, this is a low point, because in 2026, we are a so-called enlightened modern nation, aware enough about our own history now to see that context of racism, surely. And for our institutions and our political leadership to continue to maintain that veneer of indifference to the fears and the, you know, the realities of life for First Nations people is just unacceptable. As Lydia Thorpe, Independent Senator Lydia Thorpe, described the double standards at play in the aftermath of this attempted bombing. I mean, so many people called it out. So many people in just daily conversations with each other were saying, you know, bewildered by why authorities weren't treating this as seriously as other incidents of racial violence that had happened in recent times in Australia. And particularly post-referendum, there is an indifference at best to Indigenous people.
I want to ask about the impact of the referendum. I've heard many people say that the failed referendum and the debate that surrounded it made things worse. It normalised racism. Mm. What has been the impact of that referendum in 2023, looking back on that now, 2 years on?
Yes, well, during the referendum, when we were reporting on it, we could tell that the violence directed at Indigenous people was on the rise. And so 13Young, which is the specialised hotline for Aboriginal and Islander people to report racist incidents and racial violence, told us then that during the Voice referendum, the calls were up 40%. And Marjorie Anderson, who was the CEO of 13Young, said that the phone lines just went berserk, was her phrase, on the night that the vote was unsuccessful. And she said, you know, the debate was so nasty, it sort of gave people permission to be openly racist. And that was certainly what we saw and heard during the referendum. And afterwards, there was still a nasty culture war being perpetrated by the No campaigners, who wanted to make the Voice referendum vote into a culture war about welcomes to country and, you know, councils flying Aboriginal flags. So those culture wars plus the vote have kind of given permission to people to be openly racist. And post-referendum, the Human Rights Commission developed and gave to the government an anti-racism framework in 2024. That has, to my knowledge, just been gathering dust. There have been no formal responses by the government to those recommendations by the Human Rights Commission. Mm. So racism is definitely on the rise. In August last year, we saw Camp Sovereignty in Naam, 40 men from an ultra-right-wing group marauding through the camp. You know, some of them had sticks and pickets, and four people in the camp were taken to hospital. You know, a number of men, I think 8 or 9 men were charged following that incident. But this is the climate we live in now, where peaceful protests, not even protests, but gatherings, are not safe any longer.
We'll be right back.